everybody. This is Jill Ajizi. Welcome to Family Matters. Of course, I'm here with the lovely Judge Michelle Lawrence. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
I'm really great. Waiting for a couple inches of snow, which I understand you're going to get tomorrow night. We've been with this 60-degree weather for so long, so highly unusual for Illinois in January, but we're going to get it, aren't we?
Well, we're going to get it, but because of the good weather, we got a chance to meet our guest who flew in to meet us.
We did, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but I want to go over a couple of things first. You know, we have some partners on syndicatednews.net that are outstanding partners, and I don't know if a lot of people know it or not, but we have a South Beach affiliate, and we have the Stewarts. Stewart Stewart and Dina Stewart, they are a married couple. They're in South Beach. They do an amazing job. They're interviewing high-profile people constantly on South Beach, but they have just had this terrific award that they've been getting.
Fantastic relationships with my kids today, and along the way was given some referrals from people just to give some friendly off-the-cuff advice because these cases are difficult to solve. And then eventually people started to retain me, and this then become a full-time vocation, which runs the risk from time to time of squeezing out the business law practice.
Ah, okay. And so you're now having such a wonderful relationship with your children.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty well the greatest thing that I've done in my life is figure that out and assist them in moving forward on a firm basis, and they're both doing well in all aspects of their lives, and they're going to succeed and have long and happy lives.
That's just terrific. And you're who we all want to be, Brian. That's what every alienated parent wants for the end result of their alienation. So I'm just going to strive to be you.
Which is Jill and Brian, kind of the point of the show. In all the other points that we want to make, the first one we want to make is that, yes, people who are the parents almost have to know as much as the lawyers. And in most law cases, you really don't. The more you know, it's better to understand. But when you are
a family law window where the dynamic might have been tackled, and unfortunately, the judicial system itself is still problematic. There's a lot of education that is required for the judiciary right across the world, and it's unfortunately a distinct pleasure when you meet somebody like Michelle who really gets it, and that just means the challenge for counsel and the challenge for those who run judicial institutes is to do. And both are seriously invested in putting that story across to the court. A lot of the times, this is in the context of a motion where the judge just has a bunch of paper, affidavits, tons of affidavits, short, long, throwing all kinds of mud. And unless you've been specifically trained, it is confusing. So that's number one. Mental health practitioners themselves who don't have specific training can help the lawyer and the retained experts advance the story to the court and say that gets you half of the way. And then the last half of the way is still a work in progress. There is a pervasive sense of judicial timidity to just tackle this and say this is wrong and it must stop and it must stop now. And unfortunately, the experience for most targeted parents right across North America is court appearance after court appearance after court appearance, where there might be some judicial admonition of the aligned parent, but it doesn't seem to have any effect, and you just come back and come back, and quite often in front of different judges, and then there's postponements, and the court system itself, sometimes trials don't get heard when they're scheduled for various reasons, and then the whole thing peters out. So we know what the answer is, that the judicial system has to tackle it early.
Say the child has an oppositional disorder, perhaps, and perhaps it is parental alienation. It's the lawyer's job to get in there and show the real distinction, the pattern of degradation, all of the symptomatology, because judges think that people cry parental alienation every time, for example, a dad does something wrong. He's going to say, it's not my fault, she's trying to alienate. So every lawyer's job is to educate the court.
You're either lying to the court about your good faith efforts to repair the relationship with the targeted parent, or you're completely ineffective as a custodial parent. Either way, you're not the appropriate trustee for the child's right to a relationship with the other parent, and we have to remove the child. So, and you know, that falls four square in the well-known Ontario Court of Appeal case, Rogerson and Tessaro. So, when the aligned parent is ultimately faced with a trial. Some are so fixated that it takes a trial and then it takes a motion for contempt of court immediately after the trial because they're incapable of change. So that brings me to my second point, that too many targeted lawyers, mental health practitioners, and judges think that aligned parents are capable of change. An aligned parent who tolerates, permits, or fosters this type of dynamic generally hope they take it to heart and educate their own counsel.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here. You've got that right.
Well, and Brian, that's the other part of it. I mean, I think so many people, we talked about this the other night, so many people are frightened by lawyers. So many people are frightened by doctors and legislators. I don't understand that. I think that if you're paying someone to do your bidding, you should be able to say whatever you want and tell them exactly how you're feeling. And I think so many people just sit there with hands folded and, you know, perspiring.
The Internet, of course, is an unbelievable source. There's lawyer ratings now and things of that sort. And then you ask around, and you will eventually find. Look at the conferences that have taken place out there. Who's speaking? That's a good source.
Right.
Look at the peer review papers that have been published, and who's writing and speaking there. And eventually, through that sort of networking, you'll find...
How many parental alienation attorneys and mental health professionals are at the North Pole? I think not many.
They may end up in the North Pole.
They may. So I think, you know, just searching out, and it's easy to find all of the handful of people that exist in this area, but you know, it's not easy. They cost money. It's not easy to get to them, and some of these parents just can't geographically get there.
Exactly. Now, are confused by the very splitting in the mental health sense of the child, which is usually
that.
A prime indicia. Splitting is where a child looks at one parent as all good and the other parent as all bad. And no human being on the planet is all good and all bad. And the child is incapable of maintaining a nuanced view of both parents. That in and of itself, according to certain of the practitioners that I certainly hold in high regard, hard a child should work at school and different views of the use of incentives and consequences. There's all kinds of parenting styles. There's a range because parents are different human beings as well, came from their own family background, saw certain types of parenting that they either liked or didn't like. But what we would consider normative parenting, parenting that should not lead to psychological dysfunction in a child, is actually, I don't like the fact they have to do piano lessons. Children are always griping about something, but it nonetheless is a loving, normalized type of relationship. Somehow, after separation, those issues get elevated that are normal in an intact family, get elevated into, well, that's why the child doesn't want to speak to that person, or that's why the child doesn't want to see much of that person. And it's just wrong. We seem to apply different standards after separation. Fundamental logical holes in aligned parent arguments you can compile. And it is therefore possible to to put forward a case that even for an untrained judge should be quite apparent that it's an artificial type of estrangement.
Well, can't you just bring in simply a grandparent or an aunt, an uncle, or a cousin? And if there's hatred towards the extended family,
in their home, etc. And the tool that I developed is the layperson's short form of what does parenting mean? There's millions of parenting books out there. And by the way, I always recommend the targeted parents. I even have a specific reading list. Buy a ton of books, read a ton of books, and then I put that list into court to show that it can't be them, that they have this knowledge. We can all disrespect and ignoring and not acknowledging the other parent is okay, is acceptable if the child has an appropriate reason from the point of view of the allowing parent. So I always ask, what are the boundaries in your household? We have this conversation. Then I say, is treating the other parent with respect and continuing to treat them as a parent a boundary in your house? And inevitably, the cross-examination shows that it isn't a boundary. So I'm not here to, like, I'm here to spill the trade secrets. If we can get more reported decisions where judges are talking about a progressive escalation of guidance, boundaries, incentives, and consequences, we will strip the aligned parents of their rhetoric and just lay it all bare that they're actually quite comfortable with the way things are, with the status quo. They're not acting worried. They'll feel exhausted, and they can't achieve what we know is in the child's best interests. Then they're not an affected parent, and they can't be the custodial parent. So I think we're at the beginning of this. I mean, I'm hopeful that I'm taking a little snowball and rolling it down the hill, and it's going to gather mass as it goes. And that's the beauty of the Internet. So everybody, please use it.
Please use it. And there's got to be lawyers that are like you, Brian.
So they live in Aspen. But they're busy during the day, and people seek them out from everywhere. And that's the beauty of the world we live in today, that you can seek out pockets of expertise anywhere and everywhere and just add them in as necessary.
And the treasurer of PAAO, Chris Jones, is actually in the chat room, and he says, you know, it's interesting that you can be part of the team without leaving your desk. How cost-effective is that?
I directly answer the question. I want to acknowledge that being a targeted parent is just immensely difficult. You're not prepared for this. Before it happened to you, you didn't even know that this family systems dynamic even existed. You'd never heard of the term before. You're hurt, you're frustrated, you're exhausted. You may be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. You're at your worst. You deflect and focus on just doing something fun, because the ultimate solution is to let the child's actual experience with you conflict with the negative imagery and messaging that they're getting. That creates internal dissonance because it doesn't make sense, and that you hope ultimately is resolved in the child developing and more recapturing their authentic. They were always happy because that's what always having exactly what you feel like at that moment will do to you. So that's just one subtle counter-manipulation, if you will, that's available to targeted parents. Being accessible, bailing them out when they forget their phone at the wrong house or this there, and you're just always willing to drop what you're doing and go and take some stress off them, because the divorce itself is exercising control through passive-aggressive measures, is back with mom now, and after a slow period I've been helping them with the decompression, said to mom one night recently during the holiday period, thank you for not giving up on me.
Aww.
And that had been zero contact, absolute hatred. So we know that that is happening deep down. Children's innate fear of abandonment is genetic. And so you don't feed into that. You keep messaging away from the parent with whom they have the secure attachment because they're counting on that parent still being there. So it's actually the parent they reject who's generally the healthier parent and the one that the child is counting on to still be there when they get to leave the house and go to university.
And so, I think it's really useful the way you describe the, you know, you use the term cognitive dissonance, but a lot of people don't know what that is. If you could briefly talk about why the child
manifests itself, because everybody's still living together, and then after the separation, it can kind of spring forward. But yes, you can look at the prior family system dynamic for the roots of what ultimately happens.
Well, we have just about 2 minutes left, Brian, and I want to ask you if you would contemplate coming on again in 2 weeks. Would you do that for us?
It'd be my pleasure. The more kids I can help, the happier I am.
Okay, I think we've got some more information to talk about, don't you?
LAW.com, or you can call me at 416-781-0334.
Well, I appreciate so much what you're doing, and as an alienated parent, you know, I would like to say if I knew all of this so many years ago, what I know now with people like you and Michelle being such strong advocates for children all around the world, I just can't imagine all of the things that are going on with her right now. Ruthie, I think you're going to call in. Am I picking you up? I'm not sure, but I'm just going to keep talking until I know what you're doing. I think you're messaging me now, so let me see. I am not. You're asking me not to forget, and I'm not. So if you would call in, Ruthie, I'll pick you up. What an interesting discussion that she's going to have. And if any of you are interested in what's going on, apparently there's some affidavits that are on the front page of syndicated news.